Acme Lithium, a company positioned near the epicenter of lithium production in the United States. Since 1966, Nevada's Clayton Valley has been the primary production source for lithium in all of North America. Acme Lithium holds two promising lithium projects in the Clayton Valley region. Acme Lithium, U.S. trading symbol ACLHF, and in Canada, ACME. Web address, acmelithium.com. That's acmelithium.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Stars. The stars in the heavens. How far away are they? Are they moving away from us or towards us? I welcome Ken Croswell, an astronomer, author of The Lives of Stars, who has a new revelation in the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences of the United States of America about two astronomers in Scandinavia who have come up with what appears to me to be geometry, elegant geometry about stars moving away from us, moving for towards us. First, the way we've always done it. Ken, a very good evening to you. The way we've always done it involves Christian Doppler's invention several centuries ago. The presentation you make in PNAS is that we need the proper motion across our vision. We need the distance, the parallax, and we need the Doppler, the radial velocity. Have I said that correctly? And what does that help us learn? Good evening to you, Ken.
Good evening, John. Yes, those are the three things we were taught in grad school that you need for a star in order to determine its three-dimensional velocity through space. You need to know the proper motion, that is the apparent motion across our line of sight, which astronomers first detected for a star in the year 1738. And we also need to know the distance to the star, which by coincidence, astronomers first determined for a star beyond the solar system exactly one century afterward in 1838. And then the final thing we need, or we thought we needed, was the Doppler shift that is going to reveal how fast the star is moving toward or away from us. And we've all experienced the Doppler shift. This is what you hear when you hear an ambulance rush towards you and then away from you. The pitch is higher when it's moving towards you than when it's moving away from you. And light exhibits the same phenomena. Well, a star that is moving toward us is going to be blue-shifted. A star that's moving away from us is going to be red-shifted. The reason for that is because if a star is moving toward us, its light waves get scrunched up to shorter or bluer wavelengths. And conversely, if a star is moving away, its light will be shifted to longer wavelengths because red is a longer wavelength. And as to why we need to know the velocities of the stars, oh my goodness, we have learned so much about both stars and the Milky Way galaxy as a result of measuring the velocities of stars. This determines their orbits around the Milky Way galaxy. And what we discover is that different types of stars have different orbits around the Milky Way. And indeed, I talk all about this in my book, The Alchemy of the Heavens. And the young stars are in the disk of the Milky Way. They have fairly circular orbits around the galaxy. And the oldest stars are in the halo of the galaxy. They have highly elliptical orbits, often going around the galaxy backward. And by tracing out, of course, we didn't know any of this two centuries ago. It was by observing the velocities of stars through space that we pieced all this information together and learned a lot about the history of the Milky Way galaxy. And that's a lot of what my book, The Alchemy of the Heavens, is about. And so, as you say, we've always thought we needed these three things, including the Doppler shift. And what's new is, astonishingly, the measurements of star positions are now so good, thanks to two satellites in space, that in some cases, or some stars, rather important stars, since they're right near us, we can actually get away without measuring the Doppler shift.
I want to go to the elegant new solution, but I want to identify what you have done in your article. What's wrong with the old way? I think I understand it, Ken, but let me describe it to you. You're the teacher here. Some stars, or maybe all stars, moving. There are two pieces that move. The energy that comes off the star can move towards us, and that means it's blue shifting. The star itself, the energy that is the star can be moving away from us, and that's redshifting. So you get a mixed vision of which way the star is going and the precision of its stellar velocity. Did I say that correctly, Ken?
More or less, yes. Now, for most stars, it's not a big deal, but there's one type of star where it is a big deal, and that is for red. That's for white dwarfs. Okay, white dwarfs are very small stars, very compact stars. They have a bit, typically, a bit less than the mass of the sun, but they're as small as the Earth, and so their surface gravity is enormous. And when light leaves a white dwarf, that light loses energy, and as a result, it appears as a redshift, even if the star is not moving away from us. And in fact, the very nearest white dwarf is just 8.6 light years away. It's in orbit around the very bright star Sirius. That star has a gravitational redshift of 81 kilometers per second, which is huge. Now, it turns out, because that star is going around another star whose velocity we can measure, whose Doppler shift we can measure, we know that the star is actually moving toward us at 8 kilometers per second. But if we didn't know anything about this and we just measured the Doppler shift, we would think, oh, this star is moving away from us at high speed, but it's actually moving toward us rather slowly.
Now we come to the new solution or the new recommendation by two astronomers who work at the Lund Observatory. What they have proposed is, as you describe it, geometry. But I'm not going to characterize it. I'm going to turn this over to you, Ken.
Yeah, it's really quite amazing. We still need three things to use this new technique. The three things are proper motion, which is the apparent motion of the star across our line of sight, and the distance. So we still need those two things. But there's a third thing. Instead of the Doppler shift, we can simply observe how much the proper motion is either increasing or decreasing with time. Now, it used to be there was no way we could measure something so precisely as to do that. But thanks to two satellites in space, the Hipparcos mission, which was launched in 1989, and the Gaia mission, which was launched in 2013, we can now measure the positions of stars so precisely that for some stars, it is possible to measure the increase or decrease in the proper motion over the time interval between the Hipparcos era and the Gaia era. And let me try to explain this with an analogy, okay? So imagine if somebody hurls a baseball towards you that just barely misses your head, okay? Now, when that baseball is very far in the distance, it will be moving towards you very fast, but it will have a very small proper motion, okay? As it sails right over your head, the proper motion, though, will be very large, but the motion towards you will actually drop to zero because by hypothesis, we are supposing that the baseball does not hit you. And then as the baseball moves away from you, the proper motion will once again decrease, and the motion away from you will increase. And so by measuring the increase in proper motion or the decrease, you can tell, number one, whether the baseball is going toward you or away from you, and you can also determine the exact speed at which it is doing so if you also know the distance of the baseball. So just change the baseball to a star, and it's exactly the same geometry. There's no difference. There's no difference at all. And indeed, as I quote Dana Stravins in Sweden, he says, it's just geometry. There is nothing conceptually mysterious about this.
If I understand correctly, you do this each year at the same time? Is that how these satellites do it? Let's pick the date, January 1st.
Yes, yes. Basically, so for example, for Barnard Star, which turns out to be the very best star to use this technique on, the star's proper motion is increasing with time. That means it's getting closer to us, even if we didn't know the Doppler shift. I mean, we do know the Doppler shift. We know it quite well. And you can actually measure how fast Barnard Star is moving toward us using this new technique. And these two astronomers in Sweden have done that. And guess what? They get exactly the same answer as the Doppler method. So this method works. And it works for a number of other nearby stars as well.
Is it more precise? Now, it's not for all stars, as I read from you. It's for nearby stars. I ask for what nearby means. And it's for fast-moving stars. Does it give us a better measurement than we get for the old method?
For stars that are white dwarfs, yes. For other stars, the nice thing is just to have a second technique for measuring something. I mean, this is really, I view this work as the first step toward doing this. I mean, 50 years from now, 100 years from now, we'll be able to do this for lots and lots of stars. And who knows what we will find. But there are certain features that occur on a star that can actually distort the Doppler shift. Now, we already talked about the most extreme one, which is the gravitational redshift. But even more ordinary stars than white dwarfs have a gravitational redshift. For example, the Sun. Light leaving the Sun actually loses a little bit of energy as it climbs away from the gravity of the Sun. And so the Sun has a gravitational redshift of 0.6 kilometers per second. Now, that's not a terribly big deal, because generally when we measure stellar velocities, we're happy if we can get them good to about 1 kilometer per second. Nevertheless, it is something that all stars have. All stars have some gravitational redshift. Also, most stars have what's called convection in their outer layers. The Sun certainly does. Barnard star does. And in convection, a star carries heat kind of by bubbling and boiling. So hot gas rises, radiates its heat when it gets to the surface, and sinks back down again. Now, the rising gas is moving toward us, and so it's blue shifted.
Right.
And the sinking gas falls away from us, so it's red shifted. But they don't cancel out, because the rising gas is hotter and therefore brighter. So the new technique actually provides a method to measure the velocity of a star toward us or away from us in such a way that these other effects like gravitational redshift and convection, also flares on a star, that you just don't have to worry about those things. And it's always nice in science to have two different techniques for measuring.
Another famous star you mentioned in your column is the one that's closest to us, I believe, 4.25 light years, Proxima Centauri. It works for that, but it doesn't work for its twins, Alpha Centauri A and B. Why not?
Ah, yes, that's a limitation of the Gaia satellite. Now, the Gaia satellite was launched in 2013. It's done so much amazing work. I mean, just there have been so many discoveries about stars and the Milky Way galaxy as a result of Gaia. It's a wonderful satellite, but it has a huge limitation. And the huge limitation is it can only observe faint stars. It can't observe bright stars. And Alpha Centauri A, which is a star very similar to the Sun, and Alpha Centauri B, which is an orange star, somewhat fainter than the Sun, those stars are so bright that Gaia just can't handle them. Proxima Centauri, though, is, even though, as you say correctly, it's the nearest star to the Sun, it's so dim that it wasn't discovered until 1915. So for that star, the Gaia data are great. And yes, the astronomers in Sweden are able to achieve an excellent result with that star. They get a radial velocity of 23 kilometers per second toward us. And that agrees very well with the Doppler value. So once again, the technique works if the star is nearby and moving reasonably fast relative to the Sun. In the case of Proxima Centauri, it's simply that it's so nearby. If a star is sufficiently nearby, it doesn't really have to be moving that fast.
There is an oddball here you mentioned, Kapteyn's star. It's moving, it's moving backwards. Why?
Ah, yeah. So, well, this is a very interesting star. This is the nearest halo star to the Milky Way. Now, I mentioned earlier, we're in the disk of the Milky Way. The Sun and most of the stars you see in the night sky, they're going around the galaxy at high speed in a more or less single plane. But then you've got these interlopers from the halo. They're very old stars, and they're on highly elliptical orbits. And some of them are actually moving around the galaxy backward. Anyway, the nearest backward-moving star is Kapteyn's star. It's just 13 light years from the Sun, so it's fairly close. And it's moving really fast relative to us because it has such a strange orbit. So it's a perfect star for this technique. And on top of that, it's a dim red star, so it's perfect for the Gaia satellite to observe. And these astronomers in Sweden are able to achieve an excellent result. They get a result for that star that agrees very well with the Doppler shift.
All right, we've discussed the new method with stars. We're going to turn to a much more exciting possibility. What does this mean for exoplanets, especially exoplanets that look like Earth, our Earth? Ken Croswell, the author of The Lives of Stars and the Alchemy of the Heavens, writing at PNAS about a new geometry presented by two astronomers from Sweden, and now the search for our twin. I'm John Batchelor.